This Sunday feels to me, and perhaps to you also, a bit like the first Sunday after Christmas or the second Sunday of Easter. Just like the high of those major feasts is impossible to carry over into the following Sunday, it's impossible to replicate the high of last Sunday's celebration of William and Gary's commitment and love for one another. And as fantastic as it is to have Social Media Sunday, just a plug, feel free to use social media during this service, something that I didn't find out about until late last week, too late to advertise. Kind of ironic for Social Media Sunday, but anyway. And as fantastic as it is to launch the Giving Project 2019 version today, you're in for a treat later in the service. Nothing can match the palpable joy and love we experienced last Sunday for all who are here. So, my encouragement is to remember with everything you have in you that experience of genuine love and authentic Christian community, to keep that at the forefront of your mind as we shift our attention as a congregation in coming weeks as to what it means to live a generous and loving life together. Fortunately for me as the preacher, the readings for today provide lots of fodder for considering that. I'll jump right into the deep end by stressing that wealth and possessions are not inherently bad. It is what we do with those things that God has given to us that can become problematic. Listen carefully again to what we heard in the first letter of Timothy, to Timothy. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It's the love of money that is the problem. And it is not the root of all evil, but a root of all kinds of evil. Keep that in mind. The rich man in the parable of the rich man and Lazarus that we've just heard illustrates this remarkably well. And it's not like the epistles and the gospels are intended to go together. It just is pure chance when it does. But Jesus tells a number of parables that in one way or another reflect on wealth and about the great reversal that Jesus is proclaiming to the powers and principalities of his time, and I would say to our time as well. This parable is told in response to being ridiculed by religious leaders who, as Luke says, were lovers of money. The great reversal begins in the first lines of the story, in which the rich man is given a name, and the poor man at the gate is identified as Lazarus. Think about it. It's usually the rich whose names are prominently displayed across buildings and foundations and all sorts of other places. How many names of people of means can we rattle off ourselves compared to the number of people struggling to make ends meet? Jesus makes it clear that in God's economy, those on the bottom are the ones who are valued because they are named. But again, the central issue in the parable isn't that the rich man has acquired significant resources. It is what he chooses to do with those resources. He has chosen to invest in fancy clothes and expensive food while ignoring Lazarus, who is lying at his gate, desperate for food and medical attention. And it just gets worse after they both die. The rich man, despite landing in Hades, still doesn't get the reversal that has taken place. He still thinks that he is entitled to being taken care of. And worse yet, he thinks that Lazarus should be the one to care for him, something that adds insult to the injury of Lazarus dying in destitution. The comic relief in this parable comes from Abraham reminding the rich man that it's impossible for Lazarus to come to him, even if Lazarus was willing to do so, which I don't think Lazarus should have. But there is that great chasm between them. He lost his chance to care for Lazarus when Lazarus was lying at his gate. Now, I know from conversations with some of you and from my own personal struggles with the number of people who call St. James or end up literally on our doorstep in need of assistance, that this parable hits close to home. Gail Linkletter, our parish administrator, is probably tired of me saying to myself and to her all too often in fits of frustration that the requests that we receive are not my bailiwick. I am not a caseworker. I am not a social worker trained in needs assessment. And we don't have enough resources to care for everybody. There are not easy answers as to how we are called to respond in any particular situation, as individuals or as a congregation. It's way more complicated because people are complicated. We each have to wrestle with what we can and can't do to assist those who are on the margins. We have to wrestle with God, with ourselves and our conscience, and with each other. And the fact that we do have those conversations with ourselves, with each other, and with God puts us into an entirely different category than the rich man of the parable. I don't know a single person in this congregation who does not use their personal resources to assist one another in some way. It may just be a dollar here and there, but I cannot imagine any of you stepping over a person in need day after day after day without doing something. And that is what is ultimately important. Our willingness to use what we have to create a more just and equitable community instead of hoarding all of our resources for ourselves. God, speaking through the 14th century mystic Catherine of Siena, said, "I did not intend my creatures to make themselves servants and slaves to the world's pleasures. They owe their first love to me. Everything else they should love and possess, as I told you, not as if they owned it, but as something lent to them." As followers of Jesus, we do owe our first love to God. How we use what we have been given reflects this love, and it is a lifelong journey and process of continual reflection to align our use of our resources with our love for God. I believe more and more that St. James is a laboratory for us to figure out how to do this in a safe space, to enable us to then go out into the world around us and replicate it. This is the place where we do our best to model this love, just as we did last Sunday. We also model it by pooling our resources to support the mission and ministry of this congregation and of the wider Episcopal Church. That's because we are able to do much, much more together than we can ever do on our own. The end of the reading from the first letter to Timothy sums this up so well. "As for those who in the present age are rich, command them not to be haughty or to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but rather on God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, generous and ready to share, thus storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of the life that really is life. Every day, with God's help, may we learn more deeply how to take hold of the life that really is life." Amen.